crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigal. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, where it is cold, wet, and windy. For that reason, we weren't able to go to the excavation today, the Ophel excavations. We have had a day off from the dig a number of times, not too many, but probably more than we would have liked just because of the wet conditions in Jerusalem. The winter has been relatively mild, and yet for the last couple of days, we have received a fair bit of rain. Which is forbidding us from going back to the site when we're digging. It's just very difficult to understand the context, the layers, what's going on a dig site when it's wet. And so we're having a day off. Hopefully we'll be back there tomorrow. Even though we've had a day off, we have had a pretty productive day here in Jerusalem. There are a number of Herbert W. Armstrong College students that live with my family and I here in Jerusalem, and they have some classes that they caught up on. And also we are preparing this evening for one of the formal events at Herbert W. Armstrong College. It's a speech banquet, a number of speeches. I think we have about 8 or 9 this year, which will be given. This year, for the first time, we are having it hooking up all three of our campuses here in the small one here in Jerusalem, and then also over to England, and then back to the United States for the main campus. So we were able to make the most of the day off and prepare for that, making it and transforming the apartment here into more of a formal dining setting with a podium set up ready for the three speeches that will be given from this location, some of which will include some of the more lighter aspects and more serious aspects of working on an excavation in Jerusalem. So we're able to prepare for that today, but also we could look and watch some of the messages going on at the Munich Security Conference. This is one of the most important security conferences in the world, held each year in Munich. And this year was the first time that an Israeli prime minister has attended and spoken, that being Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu. He spoke today. He spoke to a smaller group on Friday, I believe, and then he had some more bilateral meetings yesterday, or some bilateral meetings yesterday. And then he took the stage today to give a very powerful 15-minute speech. And we're going to play some clips for you today of that, just because he is targeting very much with his rhetoric Iran, calling out even the foreign minister Javad Zarif, who was in attendance as well, who spoke after Mr. Netanyahu. We're not going to go into his speech very much on today's program, but he was extremely direct, probably more direct than I've seen him. And in a world where leaders tend to shy away from being so bold, in the face of their antagonists, we had Israel's prime minister stand up and speak extremely strongly, very forcefully, and telling the straight truth as he sees it. And even though there were Iranians in the audience, I do want to play a couple of clips for you. This first one here kind of sets the tone with what happened last week or last Saturday, not yesterday, the Saturday before, with the Iranian drone that was sent into Israeli territory, flew for a minute and a half and was shot down. We spoke about that on last week's program. You can go back and listen to that. We'll talk a bit about that today as well, but mainly about the response from the Israelis, especially taking its lead directly from the Prime Minister himself. So here is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the Munich Security Conference today.
Last week, its brazenness reached new heights, literally new heights. It sent a drone into Israeli territory, violating Israel's sovereignty, threatening our security. We destroyed that drone and the control center that operated it from Syria. And when our planes were fired upon, Israel destroyed Syrian anti-aircraft batteries. Israel will not allow Iran's regime to put a noose of terror around our neck. We will act without hesitation to defend ourselves. And we will act, if necessary, not just against Iran's proxies that are attacking us, but against Iran itself.
And that's what we've seen this past week. Israel no longer just going after the proxies of Iran, be it the Shiite militias, some of them close to the Golan Heights, or even Hezbollah. Now Israel is determined that it is going to go after Iranian targets inside Syria themselves. And that ratchets up this war. It makes it more of a war of proxies to a war of state actor against state actor. And this is a serious increase in the volatility of the Syrian civil war when you're talking about nations coming up against each other. And from the looks of this speech, as well as the actions of the past week, it doesn't look like Israel is going to be backing down at all. At this point in the speech, Mr. Netanyahu takes very firm aim at Javad Zarif, the foreign minister of Iran, who's there in the audience. And take a listen for yourself.
Later today, you will hear from Mr. Zarif. He's the smooth-talking mouthpiece of Iran's regime. I give Mr. Zarif credit. He lies with eloquence. Last year at this conference, Zarif said that, I'm quoting, extremism is driven by lack of hope and respect. Well, if that's true, why does the Iranian regime deny its people hope and respect by jailing journalists and activists? Zarif said it was erroneous to label Iran radical. If that's true, what do you call a regime that hangs gays from cranes in town squares? Zarif said that conflicts in Syria and Yemen do not have military solution. If that's true, why does Iran send fighters and arms to fuel violence precisely in those places?
And those that were sitting there listening to this would all know that those are facts. Those are true statements by the Prime Minister. Iran does sponsor terrorist activities, fund terrorist entities all over the world, and it is pouring its money into and finances into different theaters in the Middle East to provoke war and stir up trouble. And there he was, the Prime Minister, directing it squarely at Iran's foreign minister, saying, you do this, you do this, you do this, you are a liar. You're a liar, calling him out. And then he did what is going to be obviously the most reported aspect of this speech, something that will probably go down in history as one of Mr. Netanyahu's best moments in a speech. Take a listen.
No doubt Mr. Zarif will brazenly deny Iran's nefarious involvement in Syria. Iran also denies that it committed an act of aggression against Israel last week, that it sent a drone into our airspace to threaten our people. Well, here's a piece of that Iranian drone, or what's left of it after we shot it down. I brought it here so you can see it for yourself. Mr. Zarif, do you recognize this? You should. It's yours. You can take back with you a message to the tyrants of Tehran. Do not test Israel's resolve.
Wow, one of the more bold moments in a speech that I've ever heard, especially at a forum such as this. Holding up a piece of the destroyed drone that was shot down by Israel and looking out to Mr. Zarif in the audience and asking him, do you recognize this? You should, it's yours. Now, this is calling out Iran's actions to the greatest degree. And really, that message just then wasn't just meant for Iran. The fact that Israel will act to defend itself. It will go to war to defend itself. And that's what a number of nations listening to this speech are going to have to determine right now, whether they want that to happen, whether they're okay with allowing that to happen. Israel and the Prime Minister of Israel will do what it needs to do to confront Iranian aggression. No one expects Iran to back down. Nobody expects them to do that right now. After they've invested so much in the Syrian civil war in Iraq, creating this land bridge all the way to the Mediterranean, no one expects them to back down. And so the question is, will Israel act? And it looks like, under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, they will react. to what Iran is doing, and proof last week they'll do it forcefully. I just want to quote right now from a piece that was last week commentating on the incidents between Iran and Israel, and this was written by Tony Badran and Jonathan Shanzer, two people that work for the Foundation of Defense of Democracies, a couple of the best writers on Hezbollah, on Lebanon, Syria, and Israel. This is what they say here in their editorial in the Wall Street Journal. It's entitled, "Now All Eyes Are on Israel as It Mulls Its Next Moves. For Jerusalem, the status quo is unsustainable. They can't live with it. Israel cannot live with Iranian aggression, Iran pushing on Syria, taking over Syria, setting up bases in Syria, as well as its increased support for Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. It's unsustainable. It can't continue. The Iranians are clear," I'm continuing now, "the Iranians are clearly willing to absorb tactical strikes so long as they are able to consolidate their strategic position, which will prepare them for a future conflict with the Jewish state." They'll accept a couple of hits from Israel, like they did last week. They will let that happen. That's not too much for them. That's not enough to set them back. Then writes this, the Wall Street Journal, "So while Israel's political leaders are eager to avoid conflict," and they are for sure, no one in Israel here wants to go to war. No one wants to see their son sent off to war here in the state of Israel. "So while Israel's political leaders are eager to avoid conflict, the military brass may soon determine that postponing it would be the riskier course." It's a question, and even Mr. Netanyahu addressed this later on in a question time at this conference. He was asked about, you know, how they are going to act, or whether they will act more forcefully against Iran. And he talked about nipping this at the bud, or when it's just small. They can't postpone it any longer. An attack, a preemptive strike against Iranian interests in Syria. They can't do it any longer. They can't let it happen, or else as time goes by, Israel is going to get into a more and more precarious position. And with this powerful speech, Mr. Netanyahu was trying to send a message to Iran, but I'm convinced that he was sending a message to other nations as well. That if you don't want Israel to defend itself against Iran, if you don't want Israel to act against Iran, then you're going to have to do your part to come and stop Iran as well. And we're going to take a short break now. And when we come back, we will discuss those nations that Mr. Netanyahu was probably looking at to say, if you don't want us to go, you come help us. You do something to stop the Iranian aggression. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive. Thank you for listening.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The king of the south is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the literature tab to select your free booklet.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're talking about Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech at the Munich Security Conference, extremely bold speech, where he did call out Iran, specifically Javad Zarif, that was there, to their actions in Western Syria and the coming clash between those two, the nation of Israel and Iran, if Iran doesn't pull back. What's interesting in this speech, it's a world forum. Obviously, it's going out. This is more than just a message to Iran. It's a message to other nations that are listening in that would like to prevent Israel from doing this, and they would also like Iran to stop with its aggression. No one thinks it's a valuable thing for Israel to go to war against Iran in Western Syria, and yet it's looking like it's inevitable. Who's going to stand up and stop it? Who's going to have enough interest in stepping forward to try and stop this from taking place? Now, I do want to quote from an article that was written this past week in Deutsche Welle, a German news source, and it was a commentary, so this wasn't necessarily anyone in the government, but it was written by a man, Gil Merciano. He's a writer for a German think tank based in Berlin, right at the capital of Germany. And he looks at the question of what's going on between Syria and Israel and asking if Germany can act as a mediator between the two. Now, it seems like this situation is beyond mediating in the sense that you talk to Israel, you talk to Iran, and we might be able to find some type of compromise. Iran has proven that it's not willing to compromise when it comes to Israel's destruction. It'll only stop when it's forced to stop. And yet it does bring up an interesting potentiality here that Germany might have the necessary interest to get involved here, get involved in this situation before it spirals out of control. It was also interesting that sitting right next to the Israeli Prime Minister's wife, Sarah Netanyahu, was Ursula von der Leyen, the Defense Minister of Germany. She was there. She was there to lend support, or at least show support, to Israel. So now I'm going to go through just some of this article here. Again, Deutsche Welle, could Germany act as a mediator between Israel and Iran? And I'll leave the link for you to look at this for yourself if you want to. It's set up, this article, in a question and answer situation. This is the first question. An Israeli fighter jet was downed by an anti-aircraft fire this weekend in Syria. In response, Israel carried out airstrikes, included against what it described as Iranian targets. Is Syria going to become an area of open confrontation between Israel and Iran? Is it? This is what Merciano said. In Syria, things are moving from the chaos of civil war to a new order, the fruits of which Iran is trying to harvest in an attempt to strengthen its influence. So interestingly enough, here you have a German that's very much against foreign involvement in wars, or has been for the past, well, ever since Second World War, and he's directing this, directing the blame straight away to where it belongs, to Iran, saying that Iran is trying to benefit the chaos from the chaos of the civil war in Syria to strengthen its position. He continues, they want to build naval and air bases in Syria and strengthen Hezbollah. That's interesting he said this. That's just what Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu focused on during his speech. He goes on, the Israelis, on the other hand, had amidst all the chaos relied on non-intervention, but now they see themselves confronted with a new situation in which they are strategically inferior. Now, I don't think Israel believes that they're strategically inferior to, in that they would lose a war, but they're definitely strategically inferior to where they were years ago. Years ago, because of Iran's entrance with its own troops, with its own personnel, with its own leadership into Syria. Then it says this, it's the first time they see their arch enemy on the other side of the border with the capability of turning Syria into a platform to attack Israel in the future. The Israelis are completely changing their policy, taking much greater risks in order to halt this dynamic. Great paragraph. All of it is true. All of it is true. Israel is changing their policy. They have to. They're not initiating this change in policy because they want war in Syria. They're initiating it because, as Merciano says here, because what have Iran has done in Syria? Then it goes and says this. Next question. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is not ruling out further military action. How far can Israel go? Answer. This weekend, we saw Israel's willingness, for the first time, I think, to actually attack an Iranian target with Iranian forces. Up to now, Israel has been trying to avoid direct confrontation on this level with the Iranians, so this is a new step. And the possibility becomes much more probable that the cycle of steps and countersteps could lead to open escalation. An open escalation. From the Israeli point of view, the question is not whether there will be a next round, but when it will arise. When's it going to arise? And Israel is preparing for that reality. Again, correct in his analysis. Next question. Is the Assad regime willing to allow Iran to start a war against Israel from Syrian territory? This here is a very, very interesting question. Is the Assad regime, Assad, of course, being the leader of Syria, really willing to allow Iran to start a war against Israel from Syrian territory? I think this question is worth exploring in depth. Is the leadership in Syria, Bashar al-Assad, is he willing to hand over full, complete, total control of his country to Iran to use it to fight, use his territory to fight against Israel, knowing that his territory, his assets, are the ones that are going to take the brunt of Israel's response? Is he willing to do that? Now, up to this point, there'd be many that would just blow off this question and say, sure, sure, he's proven his willingness to go all in or with Iran. Why stop now? Well, maybe he didn't know. Maybe he didn't realize that Iran would continue its march across his nation even after the Islamic State's gone, to the point that it becomes a complete Iranian satrapy. Maybe he didn't realize that, or he should have realized that. It looked like that was going to happen, but now it is happening. Is he going to change his calculus? This is the answer by Merciano. It often seems that Iran and the Syrian regime are speaking the same narrative, but we do see some cracks when looking under the surface. Then he gives a couple of examples. An Iranian chief of staff came to Syria a couple of months ago with a list of demands, both on the economic and security level, for example, mining rights, including uranium building bases. The Syrians were effective in blocking these Iranian attempts. The Assad regime, he writes, in this fragile situation, is also trying to avoid reaching direct confrontation with Israel and trying to keep Iranian interests at bay. This is very interesting. The only reason he knows that he's in power right now is because of what the Russians and the Iranians have done to keep him in power. But now that it looks like his power is assured in Syria, he might have thought that the Iranians would be happy with him in power and that they can continue to send their weapons to Hezbollah through the conduit of Syria and leave it at that. But now he's realizing, the rest of the world is realizing, Iran's interests in Syria are for Iran. And now that that is clear to everybody through these attacks against Israel and the retribution against Iranian targets inside Syria, maybe, just maybe, Bashar al-Assad might start to change his tune. Now, I'm not trying to defend him and what he's done to his own people, yes. 500,000 people of his own people have been killed in the past 6 years, for sure. But I'm just looking at the reality here that there might come a point where he doesn't want his nation to completely answer to Iran. No leader would want that, even if you are in power over a nation. No one wants to be the stooge of another power. When you think about this, of course, you have Hezbollah, the ally or the proxy of Iran in southern Lebanon. And then you have even the Shiite militias that have virtually taken over the state of Iraq, the nation of Iraq. And then you have Syria, led by Bashar al-Assad, who is an ally of Iran, of course, who does, the Alawites are a branch of Shiaism. But at the same time, he is not a religious fanatic like Hezbollah, like Iran, or like even the Shiite militias. He doesn't necessarily have a religious motivation. He just wants power. He just wants power. And whoever's willing to give him power, he will accept their help. And when he sees that his power is going to be severely diminished, or that his own nation is going to be used as a punching bag for the Iranians, he might start to change his tune. And even Prime Minister Netanyahu hinted about this in his speech today. I'll play a clip for you. And just bear in mind that this was a response to a moderator's question.
Specifically, what Iran is doing now is this. And this is recently, this is just in the aftermath of the defeat of ISIS, the territorial defeat of ISIS in Syria and Iraq. Iran is trying to colonize Syria. It is trying to move military bases into Syria, to move its army 1,500 kilometers from Iran to Israel's backyard. It wants to establish naval bases in the Mediterranean. Can you imagine Iranian submarines next to the Sixth Fleet or off the coast of Haifa? It wants to establish Shiite militia bases, bring roughly 100,000 Shiite fighters into Syria, and it wants to establish air bases and bring aircraft, fighter aircraft, helicopters, and the like, right to our vicinity with the express goal of attacking us. So Iran is changing the ground rules in Syria. I've said we will not allow them to do that. And I backed our words with actions. So far, that has not progressed. And Mr. Assad understands that if he invites Iran in, then obviously he is challenging us to a different position than the one we've had. During the 5 to 6 years of the internal conflict in Syria, we've not involved ourselves at all in that conflict, except for helping with humanitarian aid, wounded civilians, wounded children, women. We've helped thousands of them in Israeli hospitals. But we've not entered into any conflict there except preventing Iranian transport of dangerous weapons to Hezbollah through Syrian territory. If Mr. Assad invites Iran in militarily, that changes our position. So that's up to Iran and to Mr. Assad.
Indeed, it is up to Mr. Assad to see if that is really what he wants. Knowing that Israel will act, and no, I think everybody believes the Prime Minister when he says Israel will not jeopardize its own security by waiting too long. They will act if they feel threatened. And indeed, they are being threatened. And so what will Mr. Assad do? There hasn't been too much proof that he is willing to forego his relationship with Iran. But maybe there will be outside powers that step in to try and wriggle Assad away from Iran if he can continue to rule in some fashion. Maybe there would be he would be more open to an outside power doing that. This is what this article from Merciano here from Deutsche Welle says about whether it's possible that Germany could get involved here between Israel and Iran over what's happening in Syria. The question is, are there options for Europeans to mediate some type of deal here? He says this, I think that the EU, and specifically in this case Germany, have a unique potential. It is both a strategic ally of Israel and at the same time it enjoys some level of access or reliability from Iran. Germany is the only actor in the Western world that has some practical experience mediating informal agreements between Israel, Iran, and Hezbollah. He's speaking of the prisoner swaps that took place late 90s, early 2000s. And I don't think there would be some type of peace negotiation between with Germany mediating necessarily between Israel and Iran. That's not going to happen. But notice how he concludes the comment. He says this, so it has, that is Germany, the know-how and the capacities and a huge interest to stop this cycle of escalation. Germany has a huge interest, more than probably most other countries, I would say probably the greatest interest, at avoiding an Israel full-on confrontation with Iran in Western Syria. They know that it would spill over, Hezbollah would be brought in, different Shiite militias would be brought in from Iraq, and now we would have a massive war that is going to send, as he says here, perhaps more than a million refugees north towards Europe. He says this, the shockwave of a third war in this region would have an impact over the Mediterranean. In Lebanon alone, we have 1.5 million refugees. That's more than 20% of their country right now. Are refugees who, in case of war, might be knocking on Europe's doors. They might be knocking on Europe's doors. And so while if this was somewhere else in the world, not right here in the Eastern Mediterranean, this potential battle was somewhere else, Germany might be happy just to sit out and let whatever happens. But they will receive and feel the effects of an Israeli war this time inside Eastern Syria, because it is going to send millions more up towards the heartland of Europe to try and escape the fighting. That is the danger for Germany. And that's where they all go. That's where most of them go. Over a million went there in 2000, and I think 14, 15, 16, till it stopped in 2016 with the deal with Turkey. But you've got millions of refugees that are still outside Syria that is, still don't have a place to call home. And now, if the fighting, if Israel was involved in a full-scale war with Iran and Syrian territory, that's definitely going to spill over into Lebanon. That'll spill over into Lebanon, and then where are all those refugees going to go? It's certainly in other nations' interests, such as Germany, other European nations, such as France, who has even said that they're willing to start acting militarily inside Syria if chemical weapons are proven, again, proven to be used. They will strike those facilities. So we see the French, and perhaps the Germans. That would try and move diplomatically and then possibly even militarily to try and stop this massive war from happening. Now, why am I so focused on this in particular? Well, this is a scenario that we have waited for, looked for, really, just because of biblical prophecy. Biblical prophecy indicates that both Lebanon and Syria are going to fall out of the Iranian orbit. Iran will not control those nations in the coming years. It is not going to be that way. Instead, they're going to ally with none other than Germany. And so is the situation with Israel and Iran pushing all the way up to the border of the Golan Heights with Israel, is this situation going to motivate, finally it seems, France, Germany, the Europeans to act to prevent this war? Or will this war, and this isn't something we'd look forward to at all, but is Israel and Iran going to go to war to the point that Germany has to step in militarily? We don't know. The Bible doesn't say how it's going to happen. It just says that it will. It will. Syria is going to fall out of the Iranian orbit, and this potential war between Israel and Iran and Syrian territory may get Assad to look elsewhere for his support. And maybe that elsewhere will be looking towards Europe. If you'd like to find out more about this and where we base our analysis and our forecast from, you can request our article by our editor-in-chief entitled How the Syrian Crisis Will End. It's a bold question trying to answer that. How will it end? Well, we'll tell you how it'll end. And that was written back in 2012 when it was still a crisis and not a full-blown civil war. And right now, it's an international war. Before the Russians, the Iranians, everyone else got involved, that's when we wrote this. And we still hold true to that analysis. Why? Because other powers, such as the Russians, may enter into Syria. And while they might, you know, help these prophecies along, the Bible is very clear that in the end, Syria is going to fall out of the Iranian hands, and it's going to fall into the hands of a united Europe under Germany. Thanks very much for listening today. You've been listening to Brent Nachtigal from Jerusalem, Israel. If you'd like to send me some feedback, please do so by writing your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. It's been good to be with you. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.